B-Pod Studios.
Dynamic duo.
Don't feed me crap.
Of Boston Sports Radio.
Yeah, get it right, stupid.
Felger and Matt. Presented by DraftKings Sportsbook on 98.5 Sports Hub.
Yeah, Giannis, you mentioned that like this isn't anything that you haven't seen before, and the playbook kind of is what it is. But is there anything they're doing against you defensively that does feel different? Is it any more physical than has been in the past, or you know, kind of how would you compare it in these first two games?
It's the playoffs. You know, obviously they're going to be physical. You know, they're going to be more physical. You know, there's not going to be a lot of fouls called. They're going to be more active. They're going to be more disciplined. But at the end of the day, it's the same mentality. Like, the mindset doesn't change. You got to keep chipping away, keep finding solutions to, you know, make the game yours. You know, make good plays, find your teammates, get in the paint. Like, no matter what they do, you know, my mindset and the team's mindset cannot change, you know. So, but to answer your question, obviously it's the playoffs, you know. The physicality is going to be higher. The discipline is going to be way higher, but you got to find a way. You got to find a way to win games, and you got to find a way to try to figure out, you know, no matter whatever they're doing.
That's Giannis Antetokounmpo on what the Celtics have done to him so far. It was after the game the other night. He's had, it's like everybody, 3 days to adjust, assess what's going on. I thought that cut we played for you from ESPN earlier was interesting, too. At least he's got a coaching staff behind him and a real operation behind him that can look at it and say maybe this, maybe that. We can do this, we can do that. And all these, you know, all those subtle sort of actions that we don't really pay attention to, but certain personnel groupings or certain actions on the floor that could free him up a little bit, or maybe just the simple adjustment I would make is go up from 4 feet. You don't need to get right to the cup every time, especially when you have Grant Williams on you, or Horford for that matter. They can't elevate. They can't get to where you're going to get to straight up in the air. So they're building a wall at 6 feet, 5 feet. Stop. Elevate. Shoot over them. And make that shot.
I mean, this is effectively what the same scenario facing the Celtics, albeit a little bit different after game one. You don't have to go all the way to the rim. You can stop at the free throw line and take a jumper.
I was just saying, like, can we bring back the 2-point shot
right,
a little bit?
And in the case of Giannis, you're basically saying the same thing, which is shoot from 6 feet, shoot from 8 feet. You don't have to shoot from, you know, 16 or a dunk. It can be something in between.
I was just going to say, you're not going to dunk on these guys in the half court. They're not going to allow it. They're too tough. They're too smart. They're too well coached, and they're too good defensively. They're too long. You're not going to, on the break, sure, yeah, okay. But in the half court, you're not dunking on these guys. So hit a 5-footer. Can you do that?
I mean, you got to take, sometimes you just have to take what the defense gives you.
It's a 4 o'clock hour, which means Chris Gasper from the Boston Globe is in our Town Fair Tire Studios. Hi, Christopher.
Hello.
Gasper.
Christopher.
Maz.
He's brought to you by Premier Basement Waterproofing. For some home projects, it's okay to get quotes from different companies. But when it comes to waterproofing your basement, don't be a doofus. And that's not in my copy. I added that. Certainly don't waste your time with a second quote. There's only one company you use to get it done right. And that's our guy, the guru, Mike Albert. To schedule with Crystal, call 844-LIVE-DRY or visit premierbasement.net. And then when we all do that, what's it going to be, Maz Murray? What's it going to be?
It's game over for Wada and for Tuca.
Gasper, how do you like Celtics Bucks heading into the weekend? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is an interesting test for the Celtics from the standpoint of, and I know Chris Forsberg had a piece today on NBC Sports Boston that, you know, a lot of their road games since they sort of turned it around have been sort of blowouts. And what happens if you have to win a close game on the road against a team that, as you guys were just talking about, actually has a coaching staff, actually has a coach who doesn't just sit on the sideline looking like he's waiting for an Uber Eats order. Like, he's actually engaged. He's going to make adjustments. You know, it's not just some hipster dad out there. Like, he's just watching his kid in the playground. So I'm curious what happens if they get into a close game with the Bucks, with Budenholzer and those guys on the road, how they respond, because their preferred medium of expression is the blowout. That is when the Celtics are at their best. And I thought they answered some of these questions, obviously, in the Nets series the entire series, decided by 18 points. They won two games on the road, including the clincher when Jason Tatum fouled out, where the games were tight in the fourth quarter. But there also was a little bit of a give-up factor from the Nets, particularly Kyrie. And as I mentioned, I've been really consistent on this for a long time with the Nets. I just don't have a lot of respect for the coach. I think he was a great player, two-time MVP. I think he's in over his head as a coach.
Oh, he's a clown, please. Seriously, you're being kind, Chris. He was a complete clown as a coach. He had no control over that team whatsoever. But to your point on the road, not only have they won by blowouts, all those games, for the most part, they started strong. They came out and took control of the game early. So I'm eager to see it. Chris, my feeling is with Giannis, I wouldn't double him. If he wants to get 50, I'd let him get 50. And I'm just not going to let the other guys beat me. And Mike, maybe this is where the absence of Middleton comes in. That if Giannis gets 50 and Middleton gets 30, well, now, you know, who knows? But I don't know if there's another pure scorer on that team other than Giannis that I fear. Holiday's a more... I mean, he can score.
Yeah, he's played well in the series.
Yeah, and I like Holiday, but can he get you for 40?
So here's what, they need Portis for 20, and which he is capable of, but they've got to feature him and be, you know, make an effort to get him the ball. But he is capable of. Is he capable of it for five games? I don't think that. But he can fill it, you know, on his nights. So that's what I would do to sort of bridge the gap. I think he's their third best and most consistent scoring option. Is Bobby Portis. But it's a, you know, it's a narrow path for him without Middleton for sure. And Yes. That's, you know, the close games is where I miss Middleton. The you know, the 2-point game, the side out Yes. Play, gotta have Yeah. It. You know, Budenholzer draws up the play for Middleton. That's
because he can score a variety of ways. He can score getting to the basket, he could shoot a logo three, he could shoot one of those Tatum sidestep pull up threes. So you got your point about Giannis, and I love Giannis, but I think that his game, the menu of options for him is still limited, because some of the shots you guys are talking about, he just does not want to take. And I thought you saw that the other night when he started out 1-for-11. There were some shots that were basically foul line jumpers, and he's like, I'm not shooting well, I don't want to take this. And it's like, no, you got to take that, and you got to make it, you know, to get going. And he played great in the second half. I mean, just the conditioning, the will, the want to. I mean, that's what you have to love about him. I mean, he's not going to give up. But I do think that I still, at this stage of his career, even with the championship and the two MVPs and all that, I would like to see Giannis be a little bit further along in terms of being able to score in a greater variety of ways, being able to do what guys like Jordan and LeBron did, where when people said, we're not going to let you get to the rim, then they said, then I'm just going to kill you from the mid-range, like all day. I'm just going to kill you with mid-range jump shots. He can't do that consistently. And you can tell he doesn't have the confidence that he can do that.
It's true. Your thoughts on the return of Marcus Smart and what a benefit that is, or a potential sticking point?
I mean, overall, I think it's definitely a benefit. You know, he's a great defensive player, and they need all the defense they can get. I just wonder how close to 100% is he? And this sort of factors into what I was saying before about, you know, the road games. And this is from Forsberg's piece. You know, over the final 21 road games, they were 16-5. They outscored the opponents by 15.1 points per 100 possessions. A lot of these games were like blowouts. So what happens if it's a close game and Smart is a little rusty and he starts taking some shots that the Bucks are going to give him, those threes, they're going to give him those threes. He starts taking those, and you can just see on the visage of like Tatum and Brown and the other guys where it's like, oh no.
Well, that's what I want to ask you too, Chris.
Not again. This guy.
They shot so well as a team in this last game. Do you think that Marcus maybe comes back and is like, oh, well, I got to get in on that too, and he bombs away.
Yes, especially because, again, and I've tried to condition myself, I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be presumptuous. I don't want to penalize him automatically, because the Bucks are going to give him these shots, right? These are the shots they're giving the Celtics. They're going to give him the Smart. It doesn't mean it's a bad shot automatically when he takes it, but still, you got to know time, score, you know, what's going on. I just feel like the Bucks are going to bait him into these shots. He's going to be a little rusty, and you're going to start to see guys looking there like, oh, here we go again. Not again. Here we go. Playoff Marcus.
So it just occurred to me, this was the value of Derek White. That he
no
went
risk o- there.
Right. He went 0 for 6. He didn't go 0 for 16. Like, he stopped shooting. He didn't, he'll stop,
yeah,
I think.
Because he, like most role players, he's, you know, acutely aware of his limitations. It's the unique role player that is not aware in any way, shape, or form of what his limitations are, which can be a plus and it can be a negative.
Okay, more with Gasper on the Celtics. He's got some Patriots takes for you as well. More draft fallout. We'll do it with your calls right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Do you believe in moral victories? A good loss? We'll get them next time.
No silver linings here on Felger and Mazz.
Then you are in the wrong place.
You have to accept that, so we...
Felger and Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Horford back in. Here's Connaughton to the hole. Reverse is good. So Milwaukee within 15 now. This is the closest it's been since the middle of the second quarter.
Well, Milwaukee just getting easier shots is the one thing that would concern me going forward. Boston relying almost totally on the threes. 46-20 in the paint right now in favor of Milwaukee. I think over the course of a series, Boston's going to have to find some ways to score in the paint and at the basket to win this series.
17 made threes as Holiday answers. Grant Williams has been huge tonight, but Holiday comes right back, scores the two. He's got 17, just like Grant Williams.
But what Milwaukee's doing here in the second half, the shots they're getting, that's a lot more sustainable than Boston knocking down all these threes every night.
Yeah, it's been a pretty big topic for us this week. We've done a deep dive on it, the sustainability of the Celtics' three-point attempts. Can weigh in on that, 617. Well, you're all filled up. When they jump off, you can jump on it, 617-779-0985. We'll get to you in 1 second. But Chris has a follow-up draft thought that I did want to get to. Something has become clear to you this week in the fallout of that draft, Chris. What is it?
Yeah, just sort of how sensitive the Patriots are to the perception, the public perception of their draft. And, you know, you see just sort of some of the things. First of all, I was on that conference call with Matt Groh on the Friday night, and he was, you know, he made the offhand comment about, I'm sure you guys were all grinding on film of Marcus Jones and Tyquan Thornton. So I thought that was kind of funny. But also, you know, Mike Reese had a column this week that I thought was really good, and no one's more plugged in to what they're thinking over there than Mike. And they had this little part about, you know, the part that the disclaimer that we do for every draft class, right? Mike had, which is you can't really judge this for 3 years. And I think that's totally fair. I understand. But then there was an explanation within the column of the Cole Strange pick. And it talked about how Shaq Mason had fallen off from last year.
In Bill's eyes.
And the Patriots didn't think he was worth the money. So they saw an opportunity to upgrade the position and get cheaper at it. So I was like, well, hold on a second. Wait a second. So they're telling, you know, Mike that Cole Strange is an automatic upgrade on Shaq Mason, but at the same time, don't judge our draft class for 3 years. So which is it? Which is it that we shouldn't judge these guys for 3 years, or that you picked a guard in the first round because you saw an opportunity, you saw value? Because remember, they're really sensitive to value, and what have they been getting knocked on with this pick? That it was poor value. So this is their way to sort of spin it and be like, actually, it's great value because this guy's an automatic upgrade over Shaq Mason and will make a lot less money. So that to me tells me like, the spin cycle there is on overdrive coming out of Foxborough because they're sensitive about the perception of this draft. And look, if my director of player personnel responded to a question from Greg Bedard by saying 3 years ago he was watching the draft in his basement, I would be sensitive too.
Okay, why don't you explain that?
So Bedard asked Matt Groh a question about how different it was this year with the draft. And basically, I think the basis of the question, the pretext of the question was, you know, this is your draft, Matt, supposedly, right? Ostensibly. And so Matt Groh responded with this in part. So it hasn't been a huge departure from what it was last year, which was a big departure from what it was the year before. Sitting in my basement trying to follow along with what everything was kind of looks like I was right where you are right now. So before last year in the draft with Mac Jones, he's saying, if I'm taking, I mean, unless he was joking, I mean, I'm taking him at his word here. He's basically saying that, you know, he was not, he definitely wasn't in the draft.
I had absolutely nothing to do with this process as soon as 2 years ago.
Yes.
I was in my basement playing with myself like the rest of you.
Pretty much. That's pretty much what he said. If he's being serious.
He didn't mean to out himself. That wasn't the point. He was trying to make sort of an offhand comment
about how this year is different. He's in charge or whatever.
Well, he's basically saying this year is not different from last year, but it's way different from 2020 when I was like watching this on TV like you guys.
So what he's and what Chris is alluding to is this kid has made a ridiculous jump.
Correct.
In terms of his job description and, again, presumably his responsibility.
But also, if you look at it, too, the other point I want to make on this, and this is not an anti-Matt Groh point, it shows you how insular those prior drafts were. Because when you go back to 2020, at that point, Matt Groh's the national scout. He's like the highest ranked scout for the draft process for the Patriots. Because then the next year he becomes, you know, director of college scouting. And now this year he's director of player personnel. So I would say it's pretty rare for a team to not have their national scout in the room during the draft. I mean, the Patriots draft room, the war room, smaller than most. But, I mean, again, taking him at his word here, like if he really, you know, whether he's in his basement or not, whatever, he wasn't in the room
so
for the draft.
Before, was
there's
there
not a lot of humans out there who are doing that.
Thank you, Matt. Was there a room? What was the year Bill was in Nantucket with Nike at the computer?
Oh, that's true. That was 2020. Yes, that's true.
So was there? Point. So yeah. Was there no room?
Yeah, I mean, maybe not.
Maybe that's why. Draft, yeah, that makes sense. That's fair.
Believe me, I love I do love the narrative as much as anyone, but to be fair.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm not sure there was a room.
That's a good point.
No, Matt, the other
Chris
thing
did a
is
a great job of being on that
but,
early.
But he did say I was in my basement trying to follow along with what everything was. So even in 2020, trying to follow, like, again, they set all that. So there is no room to be in, but I know they set everything up so all those people could, you know, speak with each other quickly. It doesn't sound like he was keyed in, clued in on that. At least not the way Nike was.
What'd you like say? He's at the children's table.
Yeah, the chief national scout. Is that what you said?
Yeah, he was national scout. So that's like you're like basically, you know, like in baseball, yeah, the cross checker.
Yeah.
It's like you're the scout that checks the work of the other scouts. You're like the chief scout.
No, well, he wasn't.
No, well, then he definitely wasn't in the room because Bill was ignoring those people then anyway.
So I just thought
like,
that
stay home.
I just thought that was interesting. You know, so again, you know, they're sensitive to this, and then there's some other stuff that, you know, sort of comes out here in the wash of what they're talking about. So I just feel like they're sensitive overall to both who's making the picks, the methodology behind the picks, and the actual picks.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. Do you think it was Matt Groh's draft?
Honestly, I don't, but I've heard different things, so it could be. I could be wrong. I think it could have been his draft, but I think he came up in this organization. It's the only one he worked under. It worked in, I should say. Bill's the only person he's worked under. That's how he learned to scout. So I think there's this natural sort of deference, right? And I know on your show the other day, I forget what day it was, Sunday or Wednesday or whatever, you know, NBC Sports Boston was showing the video of Groh, and it's like he's slinking up to Bill, and he kind of shoulders slumped. Like, it didn't look like somebody telling somebody what they're going to do. It looked more like, you know, when you're a kid and you ask your parents for permission, like, can I buy this candy bar? Can I get Tyquan Thornton, Bill? Is that okay? Can I get a Tyquan Thornton? I'll be really good, I promise. I'll be a really good boy if you let me get a Tyquan Thornton.
What do you make, though, of that pick and sort of how he runs counter to a lot of what they used to draft at that position?
Yeah, I mean, maybe that does have his sort of fingerprints on it, but I look at it like this. You know, I don't feel it's as counter as people think it is. I know, I get it. The hand size is small. The three cone is bad. But when they have drafted receivers up high, first, second round guys, normally, and this is where it's consistent, there's one overwhelming physical trait that sells them on the guy. Bethel Johnson, speed. Bethel Johnson could fly like this guy could fly. You know, Chad Jackson, it was the whole size speed thing. It's like, this guy's this big and he runs a 4.37 and his three cones like a 6.7 something. Oh my God, we got to draft this guy instead of Greg Jennings. So they get blown. N'Keal Harry, 6'4", 225. We love it. He's big. He's physical until he's not. So they do, when they pick a receiver high, they're basing it on physical characteristics, sort of that idea. That old Bill Parcells sort of planet theory. There's only so many guys on the planet that either are this size or have this speed or can do this thing. They're basing it on that. And I think this pick's based on that too, which is speed. This guy can run in a way that very few guys can run. So I know some of the other stuff is different, but I don't really think it's all that different from the other wide receivers they've picked this high.
I definitely think Matt Groh had influence in this draft. I'm just going back to the whole, relative athletics. What's it called again?
The RAS.
Relative athletics,
yeah,
RAS.
Yeah, like a lot of these guys are big RAS guys.
Sure.
Which doesn't, Bill to me does not feel like an RAS guy.
No, definitely not. And I looked up last year's draft just to get an idea. Ramondre Stevenson's grade was low.
On the RAS.
Yes, he was below average, and he was one of their best picks in that draft. And that feels more like a Bill kind of player to me, big back. You know, he's got some speed and had some issues early, but That feels like a Bill kind of player. This thing feels like Matt Groh, like he just sat there and, you know, punched out the printout, and here you go. These are the guys we're taking.
I like some of their picks. I mean, I do like the Marcus Jones pick. You know, I think that's, I like him. You know, that guy, he has some swag. He can return. He's feisty. I think that would be a good pick. The Jack Jones pick, I think, was a solid pick. So, I mean, I like what they did at corner. Some of the picks I like. You know, I didn't like the quarterback. I don't know. You know, I didn't, I'm not going to pretend I watched a lot of Western Kentucky. I just was sort of like, you have other holes here, and you have a pretty good quarterback. I mean, you can find backups. You can find, I remember one year, you know, Matt Gutierrez was the backup. I mean, I don't think you need to use a fourth round pick on a backup quarterback.
All right, I promise. Phones with Casper right after the up.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Common sense.
At the end of the day, it's still all about sports.
We don't take it seriously.
And whatever's on Jim Murray's mind.
Get over the persecution complex, you children.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, as promised, let's do some calls here with Chris Gasper. Stephen Westbrook on the Patriots. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi. I love your show. Big Michael Felger fan. First time calling.
Thank you, Steve. What do you got?
I believe the Patriots drafted Marcus Jones to make him a slot receiver. I think he's perfect. As Chris Gasper said, he's feisty. He's fearless. He's fast, shifty. He can catch. If you look at his highlight reels, he's perfect. He'll be great.
All right, Steve, thanks for the call. What do you think?
I mean, I don't think that's why they drafted him, but he played receiver. I mean, they gave him some time, and they had good receivers at Houston. That's Dana Holgorsen. I mean, that's a sort of a run-and-gun type of offense, and they made sure they got him on the field and gave him some time there. So I wouldn't be shocked by it, but I don't think that's why they did it. I think he's a corner first, but I have heard people refer to him as sort of like a reverse Troy Brown. So if they got thin or they needed to do something, you know, I could see them potentially working him in there at some point. But, I mean, his rookie year, I think that's a little tough.
Do you think they could kick Bourne inside?
Yeah, he played some in the slot. He did. I think it was Doug Kide had that today, like how many snaps he played in the slot. That's almost sort of their problem. Like, I feel like almost all of their receivers are better suited to be slot receivers. Like, Nelson Agholor, when he was with the Eagles, more than 50% of his snaps were in the slot. And I know, you know, Big Jim Murray will remember this. You know, he had his way with the Patriots in the slot in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that was Bartomosi, right?
Yeah.
Who didn't make that tackle?
Yep. Yeah, but Chris, I thought, you know, last week when this was coming out, like, yeah, they're also going to make him a slot receiver. Like, okay, here we go. But maybe they are going to be more open to this. Did you see the stuff about De'Eriq King this week?
Yes.
Hurricanes quarterback. Yep. Undrafted rookie free agent.
Yeah.
Now, they're saying this kid isn't going to be a quarterback. He could be a slash role. He could be wide receiver. He could be a returner. We'll use him 90 different ways. It does feel like they might be more open to utilizing players in different ways.
Yeah, I look forward to that because then, like, years from now, if Thornton's a bust, they'll be like, it doesn't matter. They got De'Eriq King. Like, that's what we're going to hear.
Bruce, I do think the offense is changing. Sorry, Mike, go.
Go ahead, Maz. What?
No, that again, when you talk about all these parts, like, you know, using a defensive back at slot or, you know, drafting a kid who can run down the field in Thornton or all these, you know, moving this guy to the slot, using him in different capacities. King now. I feel like it's going to be different.
You're going to run the spread?
I don't know if it'll be the spread, but it'll be different. It won't be the Tom Brady offense.
Okay. Maury, it's obvious Maz has heard this, and he doesn't want to present it as such because he keeps bringing it up. So, like, tip off.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Bruce in Weathersfield. Go ahead, Bruce. What do you got on the Celts?
Yeah, thanks, guys, and Gasper. When Giannis sits and Horford is resting, I would insert Pritchard and go up-tempo to attack the paint with Brown and White. This will balance our offense, get White scoring, and run their big men.
Okay.
Celtics.
Why do we need to get De'Eriq White scoring?
Well, I do think you will need some sort of offense. I mean, look, you don't want it to be a situation where when he's out there, it becomes 4-on-5. I mean, he is going to have to knock down some shots, and he is going to have to show that there's some element of offensive threat to his game. And why it's important for Derek White to have that is because that means you can keep him on the floor defensively, where Peyton Pritchard is a little bit more of a liability. You know, if you have to keep going sort of offense defense substitutions with those two guys, then you're losing something. Whereas if Derek White can give you some of the offense he gave you when he was with San Antonio, then it's a little more balanced, especially behind Smart.
It already is 4-on-5, Chris.
Well, he had a bad game, no question about it. Yeah.
We've got Nick. He's in Westport on the Red Sox. Hi, Nick.
Sorry about that, guys. So real quick, Maz, I wanted to talk to you about the Sox real quick. The bullpen, absolutely god-awful. As a wise man on 98.5 once said, they suck and blow, the entire lot of them. I've had it. I want Whitlock back in there, and if he's not going to get in there, I kind of want your opinion on it. Do you think they're going anywhere this year if that bullpen can't figure it out?
Okay, well, let's start with Gasper. What's your take on the Red Sox here?
Yeah, I mean, I go back to sort of what I've said to you guys before. I mean, obviously it's really bad, but I think that this is a transitional year for them, or otherwise known as a bridge year. And what I mean by that is that I feel like they're really not going to stretch themselves for external solutions. The solutions to these problems, it feels like, have to be internal, whether it's a Franchi Cordero, Jaron Duran, whether it's they get Sale back June the 6th or whatever, and that means that somebody can go, like a Whitlock can go to the back end of the bullpen. I think they are going to exhaust every possible avenue of internal fixes before they do anything external. And even when it's external, I think it's going to be more like the, can we find this guy off the scrap heap type of thing.
Jalen Davis.
Yeah. I just don't think that, I think this is one of these years where they feel like our prospects are sort of like a year away. They might not be able to help us now, but we don't want to move on from them. What we have is what we have, and we'll try and patch it and fix it. I mean, doesn't the whole roster feel kind of patchwork? Like, every time I look out there and I'm like, why is Christian Arroyo in this lineup? Why is Franchi Cordero in the lineup? You know, Bobby Dalbec's at first. Like, doesn't it feel patchwork to begin with?
Yeah, but it felt patchwork last year. Yeah, it did. I thought, I remember saying before the season, get ready for a lot of platoon ball, because that's what they're going to do. So, but Whitlock to the bullpen, to the caller's first point, absolutely, 100%.
100%.
They should have never taken him out of there. I don't know why they took him out. Houck should be in the rotation. Whitlock should be in the bullpen. And so the idea of Houck doesn't throw enough strikes to be a reliever. You know, he can get away with a walk in five innings because you might be at the bottom of the order. But if you're going to pitch big innings in a tight game and get pinch hitters and everything else, no. I want Whitlock in there. I want Whitlock for the late innings.
We've got Wayne and Yarmouth on the Celtics. Go ahead, Wayne.
Well, you guys have made it clear that historically they can't sustain this level of three-point shooting, and reasonable people are going to agree with that. But can you guys see this becoming then more of a bash fest defensively and games coming back down into that 91-86 range or something? And if so, who do you think wins the next three games, three games needed?
I mean, Wayne, I think the Celtics' defense is more sustainable than shooting over half their shots from beyond the line. So, like, that thing, that should travel. When the sample's getting bigger. They didn't just do it to Durant. Now they're doing it to Giannis, and they're pretty much, matching what they did to Durant to Giannis, even though they're kind of different players. And so, like, that thing may be that thing. So, look, the Bucks had 86 points. You know, if you hold the Bucks to 86 points, you can shoot the ball from half court if you want. You're going to win that game, right? I mean, that's if that's really what we're talking about.
You can shoot it out your ass. Seriously. So look at when he says, are we going to get these 94-89 games again? I would tell you that. I think you're basically getting them already. I think that's essentially what these are. Now, look, they've been 101-89 and 109-86, but you're basically getting games being played in the 90s.
You know, I mean, here's what I would just say in general. Stepping back one step, I think, that last game was so great for Boston, and they've done such great work defensively the whole playoffs. I mean, there's reasons to feel good. I'm not telling you this like you should feel bad. But if you do step back, the Bucks are technically ahead in the series. I mean, they won on the road. They broke serve. And they did what they set out to do, which was, what any team does. You get that split on the road in the first two. So they actually did what they wanted to do, and you didn't. You didn't hold serve. So just, keep that in mind. You know, who's got the advantage here? The Celtics are favored. They still are.
Yeah.
And should be. But the Bucks actually came out of this thing where they wanted to be and not where you wanted to be.
No, I think that's fair. I think also, though, if you look at the first two games, what you see is another element of the series, which is that the margin for error for Milwaukee is smaller than for Boston. You know, they have to play sort of a very specific way and get, you know, very specific sort of defensive effort from their whole team. Now, you could look at it and say, hey, you know, Giannis is going to do better. Giannis Antetokounmpo is going to do better offensively than he did in game one or two. So the margin for error is greater. But I still think without Middleton that they want to make it more of a rock fight. And that's what game one was. When they sort of got back into that game two a little bit after being down 25, when they cut it to 12 before Tatum hit the three with about 4 minutes left, it was like, you know, a snooze fest rock fight most of the second half. That's how they want to play this, and that's how they can win it. I think if it starts to get sort of up and down offensive execution, then they're going to be at a loss.
Long commercial-free segment is next. A couple open lines if you want them at 617-779-0985. We'll hit on the importance of Grant Williams and a really good exchange this week when Udoka was on with Beadle and Zolak. I want you to hear that coming back again in our long commercial-free segment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is the place Boston sports fans come to get some positive vibes for their teams.
Anything but. It's time to panic.
Maybe not. Now, back to reality with Felger and Maz.
We saw the game that Grant Williams gave you in game two. They were talking about him on the broadcast because they had a mic'd up moment with him on the bench, and they started to discuss sort of his personality and how for a young guy he seems to have a voice. Would you agree with that assessment from the broadcast the other night?
For good or bad, yes, he has a voice.
Well, when you say it that way.
he's very talkative, very opinionated, but on the floor is what we need. We need the communication, very vocal, and we encourage that. And like I said, off the court, he doesn't stop either. So we take it with a grain of salt, and we'll take it if he's that vocal on the court.
What's his most unorthodox opinion that you could share with us?
That he should get plays ran for him like Jason and Jaylen do.
Know your spot.
That is unorthodox.
A little bit.
All right. He wants some play. I call one play for him this year against Oklahoma City when Gilgeous Alexander was on him. He got a post up and Gil just blocked him at the rim, and that was pretty much his one attempt.
That was great. I heard that in real time with Udoka. I'm with Zolak and Burchin. Catch the full interview at 985thesportshub.com or the app. And I sort of tie that together with, I saw this, I think it was happened yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, where Udoka was doing a press conference. And he was asked about the importance of Marcus Smart returning. And Smart apparently entered the interview room. And he saw him out of the corner of his eye and said, yeah, we don't really need Marcus Smart, frankly. And, you know, then they laughed and blah, blah, blah. But it's like, boy, that tells you, you got a good fit there with your locker room if you can bust balls like that.
You see his personality coming out now.
It's not just his personality, but, yeah. I mean, you know you're on good footing with your players when you can say, yeah, the guy talks too much. We take it with a grain of salt. He wants me to draw plays like he's Brown or Tatum. I did that once. It got blocked, and that was pretty much it. Like, that's, you've got to be pretty comfortable with your player to be able to do that.
Definitely.
Could Brad Stevens have done that at the end?
Hell no!
Right.
No.
You think Bruce Cassidy can do that? No. I think I hate him like it is. Like, I mean, he can't ball bust his players right now. So it's like, I don't know, it's just a small thing, but I think I think the team's in a good place with their coach.
Definitely, yeah, and I heard Mike Gorman make some reference to this too during the week when he was on with Toucher and Rich, and he said how Udoka really approaches it still like a player, and the players connect to that, which is something Stevens definitely can't do.
But they also connect to it. You guys know what I always say, like winning's the ultimate deodorant. Like they connect to it because they're winning.
Right.
Yeah. You know, like if they had gone 500 like they were the first 50 games, then I don't think he'd be cracking those jokes, or it wouldn't be taken the same way because people would feel like their position on the roster is in jeopardy. So, again, I mean, it's one of those chicken or the egg things. And, like, you know, even people with the Celtics, like, you talk to them and they can't tell you, Bunyer, was it they got the buy-in and then they started winning? Or was it that they started winning and got the buy-in?
What do you
it doesn't
think?
Really matter at this point because it's there, but...
What do you think?
I think, I think the offensive buy-in came when they started winning. Defensively, I think they knew, okay, this is how playing time is assigned. If you don't play defense, you're not going to be out there. And I think they got that sort of immediately. And even, you know, Ime said this, that it was easier to get the defensive buy-in than the offensive buy-in, that took longer. I think the offensive buy-in in terms of the ball movement and be able to space and replace when you pass and all that stuff, I think that started to come up when they got healthy, had all their guys, and started winning. They were like, oh, okay, let's play like this.
Do you think anything happened? Any moment of truth? You know, people point to Smart calling out the guys for not moving the ball, which doesn't really time out with when they started playing well.
Yeah,
the Smart trade rumors. He was involved with some pretty heavy trade rumors, and he came off of COVID, I think, and that sort of times out more.
It does.
So, I mean, was there something behind the scenes? I know we've sort of alluded, Stu has alluded to maybe some sort of internal ultimatums about the coach and his status, and, you know, he may not have made it through the year or something. I don't know.
I would like to know when exactly that sort of pledge of allegiance meeting happened between Tatum and Brown, where it was like, not, you know, I want to be here, you want to be here, let's do this together, whatever. Because I feel like that calmed a lot of stuff down. I don't know exactly when that happened, but it seems like from that, if I had to pick one thing, it was like those guys committing to each other and letting the organization know, like, okay, neither one of us is looking for an escape hatch here.
I mean, it's right after the Knicks loss, I think.
And that's a lot of people point to that as a turning point.
Yeah, I mean, look, something got clarified there. There was some sort of synergy got established at that point. That Knicks loss was horrendous.
No, so bad.
It was horrendous. And people, and look, again, maybe internally someone said, well, look, fellas, if it stays like this, we're going to do something. The deadline, or we're doing it after the season. So you guys can decide whatever the hell you want, but we're not going to go on like this. And maybe that's what precipitated the meeting.
Stu, I know, has something. Has to.
Yeah, I think it's around that time of the Knicks game. I mean, I think they were threatened around Christmas time. I think everybody's jobs were threatened. Like, okay, you guys got to pick Udoka. This isn't working. We'll bring Brad back. And I think I said in real time in December that, like, the coach's job, the coach Udoka wasn't going to make it to February 1st.
I mean, I like that one. You guys wanted this guy, and you're not going to play for him? So if you're not going to play for him, what's the point? We'll give you the old guy. How do you feel about that? And that's when they said, all right, fine, we'll start playing. I don't know, like that. That makes sense to me.
Absolutely, it makes sense. I mean, because it was like a switch. They almost changed overnight. You never see it like that, where literally it's the same players. And I know there were health and injuries and stuff like that.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like this before in the NBA.
It was stunning, the turnaround. All of a sudden, because what was our complaint for the first half of the year? They don't play together. They don't play together. Then all of a sudden, they're whipping the ball around the court and blowing people out by 25 every night and opening up. They went a stretch of like six games on the road where they didn't trail. They scored first and never trailed.
Jesus.
It was unbelievable.
All right, do we have Gasper and Murray tomorrow?
Yes, we're like the pre-Celtics pregame show tomorrow. So join us at 11 a.m. to 2.
Feels like a fully loaded program.
That's right.
It is.
Do you go to 2:30 because of the pregame or no?
No, no.
Definitely not.
We got Matt McCarthy after us. No, I already checked with management.
Not.
We don't have
that kind
of
time. Well, you would go really actually to 3 to get to the pregame.
Yeah, we can't do that.
Nope.
Well, Gasper definitely not doing that. He's going to use his lint brush on his sweater tomorrow.
Not exactly hearing Umbutu there from the Gasper and Murray program. 2 o'clock comes and they're out.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't want to give away any secrets. Never mind. I would just say, you know, sometimes that the 2 o'clock, Sports Hub update is something that, has been done before.
It happens at 157, you mean? Is that what you mean?
No, it's going to sound strikingly familiar to the one that was done at 1:30.
Yeah. It's recorded.
It's going to sound exactly like the one that was just strangely familiar to the one that was done at 1.
There's no secret there. That's why I always say, if there's games going on, check your phone.
Yes, he does. He literally says, he's like, and for the latest scores, check your phone. And then he goes,
I'm halfway down 93. Places to be.
That all comes your way tomorrow at 11.
You know, Murray, I was just going to say, working with Gasper, it just occurred to me, he's got to be like going to see a shrink. because you're only there for he's only there for 50 minutes, but you pay for 60.
Jasper, we'll see you next week, bud.
Sounds good.
All right, we have an hour to go, I promise. Open up to your calls in the final hour of an agenda-free Friday. First, an update, a real live update from Big Jim Murray.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.